morning. Please call a first case. Counsel. Please proceed.
The issue is whether for 1981 cases, the mandatory concurrent maximum terms under 706-668 HRS contradict discretionary consecutive minimum terms. It's not true that you can't have one without the other. That is, it's not true that for 1981 repeat offender cases, the court cannot impose consecutive mandatory minimum terms, excuse me, without also imposing consecutive maximum terms. Now, here both parties are invoking the plain meaning rule with entirely different views of what is plain.
Ms. Barnard, I noticed that you did not cite, nor did the prosecution in any of the briefs, State v. Salfua, 67 Hawaii. Are you familiar with that decision?
No, I'm not.
Maybe you did. Okay.
The defense admits that the word, well, the different views are of the words sentence in 706-606.5, the repeat offender statute for 1981. And the phrases above sentences and law to the contrary. The defense admits that the word sentence, as used in the repeat offender statute of that time, does not mean the entire sentence or the overall sentence. Rather, the word sentence is used in its ordinary sense, citing HRS 1-14, general or popular use or meaning. The word sentence is commonly used interchangeably to refer to all or parts of an overall sentence. And that's true in various places in the Hawaii Revised Statutes and in decisions of this court.
Ms. Barnard, if the court has the discretion to sentence a person to consecutive mandatory minimums, logically, if we're talking about minimums, we need to know minimums pertaining to what. Those mandatory minimums must relate to the maximum indeterminate sentence. Must it not?
Yes, well, these are cases where the person has either one or more prior offenses. And then if the new conviction is for an enumerated offense, then the mandatory minimum kicks in.
So a mandatory minimum must be part of the indeterminate maximum sentence.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And in the case of Class A and life sentences, you can do consecutive mandatory minimums all up and down the line, and it would fit in, except that you run into Kumo Kao problems. And I can skip over this part about what the word sentence means if you would like. I just wanted to say it's used interchangeably to mean all of the sentence or segments of the sentence. And that's true in State versus Toili'ili, where that case even has a subheading, credit due on each of the consecutive sentences. And HRS 134.6 firearm statute, possession of firearm and commission of a felony, refers to segments of the overall sentence. A conviction and sentence under subsection A shall be in addition to and not in lieu of any conviction and sentence for the separate felony. So they're using the word sentence interchangeably for all or parts of the sentence. Two different counts in the same charging instrument. And also throughout 706, Chapter 706 of the Penal Code, 706-605 especially, and also Abuse of Household Member Statute 709-906. So those are places where the word sentence is used to refer to all or parts of the sentence. I submit that if the legislature had wished to allow consecutive maximum terms for repeat offenders in conjunction with consecutive mandatory minimum terms, they would have said so. And when you look at the phrase then or previously imposed, it looks like it could have been meant to refer to the prior conviction that triggered the repeat offender statute. The reason I say that is it's very frequent that the prior conviction that triggers the repeat offender statute is up for resentencing on the same day as the new offense. And that's because, and that especially happens when the defendant got probation for the prior offense that triggers the repeat offender. They got probation for that, then there's a motion to revoke probation based upon the new conviction. And then often those are consolidated under for resentencing on the same day. So obviously we're not supposed to look at legislative intent, but I do think that that's what they were thinking of when they said then, but as this court recognized, the word then is broad enough to cover the instant offenses as well. But it's much less confusing if you realize that that is a very frequent situation where the prior conviction is up for sentencing very same day. So, as
Ms.
the court...
Barnard, if a mandatory minimum term is part of the indeterminate maximum sentence, and the statute gives the court discretion to run mandatory minimum terms consecutively, and isn't it logical that because the mandatory minimum terms are part of the indeterminate maximum term, and the court has the discretion to run the mandatory minimums consecutively, that logically the court then has the discretion, or the court can run the indeterminate maximum terms consecutively also, because they must necessarily, or those terms necessarily follow with the mandatory minimum terms?
I disagree, Your Honor. I believe that when you look at specific cases and their fact patterns, and I guess I'll cite the Chiavi case right now. The Chiavi case involved 14 different counts. There were 11 forgery counts, 2 counts of theft in the first degree, and under a separate criminal number, theft in the second degree. Those were all Class C felony cases. Now, if you did run the counts all consecutive because you wanted to do consecutive mandatory minimum terms, and say there's a 5-year, say it's the third offense, there's a 5-year mandatory minimum term, 14 times 5 is 70 years. If it's a 3-year mandatory minimum term, I mean, 14 times 5, the maximum term for Class C felonies, I'm sorry. That would be 70 years. Mandatory minimum term of 3 years times 14 would be 42 years. That gets into abuse of discretion. What the court can do is, well, in those days it was 1981, and consecutive sentencing was permitted as far as anybody knew. Nobody knew that was unconstitutional at that time. So if the court gave an extended term, and we're pretending it's 1981, then you could fit 2 or 3 mandatory minimum terms of 3 years in that. So the person could be serving 9 out of 10, or if it's the third conviction, 10 out of 10. So 9 out of 10 and 10 out of 10 for forgeries and thefts seems to be more than any court would want to do. So I'm saying that normally the mandatory minimum consecutive, if you're doing it within the same offense. Now, I'm saying also that Tavares was the law at that time. Tavares would preclude that also. But just taking several examples from existing cases, the Gaylord case, same thing. You could give the defendant 10 out of 10, 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10, 2 mandatory minimums consecutive. And in this instant case,
I'm not sure. In all those cases, was this an issue that the mandatory minimums were run consecutively, or just using the fact patterns to illustrate your?
I'm just borrowing the fact patterns because they exist in published cases, rather than make up hypothetical ones.
The judges in those cases didn't do what you said could be done. They didn't run all these mandatory minimums consecutively.
No. In fact, the commentary to this statute doesn't even discuss consecutive mandatory minimum terms. It only discusses lesser mandatory minimum terms. And as you can see,
if they had done that, then you could argue that the sentence was an abuse of discretion because disproportionate to the crimes committed.
That's true.
So you have that in every sentencing case, don't you?
That's true, Your Honor, but I'm saying that there's no contradiction that 706-668 is not a law to the contrary when it comes to consecutive maximum terms, because normally you could do some, at least some, if not all, consecutive mandatory minimums within the maximum sentence, even if it's all consecutive. I mean, even if it's all concurrent. And especially a Class A, 20 years, and a life sentence, of course, and 10-year sentence, and so forth. And always, Your Honor, it could be done if it's a prisoner offender, because there's a prisoner offender exception, and that includes if they're on escape or work furlough or actually in prison. So it's always possible in those cases to run the mandatory minimums consecutive. And it's possible with respect to the prior offense, the maximum term of the prior offense, that expiration date, you can run it consecutive to that. And yes, I can see that that could be a contradiction in that limited situation where it's a repeat, the offense that triggered the repeat offender, if the judge wants to make the mandatory minimum term consecutive to the unexpired term of that. But to say that it's a contradiction across the board for 706-668 because you
can't... I don't think I understand the contradiction that you're describing. Could you put it a different way?
let's see.
In other words...
Well, I don't think there is a contradiction,
what,
Your
what,
Honor.
What were you suggesting was a contradiction?
Well, it's really not clear in this statute, but it is clear in the statute that came after this one that for the prior conviction, you can make the mandatory minimum start after the expiration date of the previous sentence. In other words, this person who got probation for the offense that triggered repeat offender, they got their probation revoked, they're having their sentence the same day as the new offense. It looks like if the court wanted to make their a mandatory minimum consecutive to the expiration date of the prior term, they could. And whether that would fit or not would pretty much depend on how much time served credit the person had.
Well, in any event, with respect to the statute we're dealing with, 606.5 as it was written in 1981, it clearly permitted consecutive mandatory minimum sentencing.
That's correct.
Ms. Barnum, your client was convicted of a prior offense, a firearm offense?
Yes.
What happened to that offense as it relates to this particular case during the sentencing? Was that considered at all?
Oh, okay. In that particular case, the probation had already been revoked when he was sentenced by Judge Sugiyama. So, and that's in the record on page 18 of the October 5th, 2006 transcript.
It was revoked prior to this particular
That's
condition.
Correct. It was. It had already been revoked, and that's in the record on that transcript, and that's what the prosecutor had announced to the court at that time.
And was he sentenced for that particular firearm offense?
He had been sentenced, and...
What was he sentenced? I'm sorry.
I believe 5 years, open five.
So that particular sentence had been served already?
No, there was still some unexpired term left, but Judge Sugiyama did not run anything consecutive to that. In fact, Judge Sugiyama ran all the mandatory minimum terms concurrent. It doesn't look like the parties at that time, when that sentencing was held in 1984, it doesn't look like they had interpreted the statute to allow consecutive mandatory minimum terms within the same indictment. And as I said, Tavares was the law of the case at that time. And incidentally, I do not believe that Tavares was incorrectly decided, but for a different reason, if you want to hear about that.
What was the proposition in Tavares? I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, Tavares had two prior burglary offenses under the same charging instrument. In fact, the two burglaries occurred the same day. And then he had one new burglary offense. So the question was whether the new burglary was a second or a third offense for purposes of repeat offender. And because of the way the statute was worded, or the policy behind the statute, not the wording, this court believed that this Tavares was incorrectly decided because Mr. Tavares got a 10-year mandatory minimum sentence because the new burglary offense was deemed a third, the first and second being the ones under the same charging instrument. If you alter that, and say Tavares had three prior burglaries or four prior burglaries, then the repeat offender statute does not kick in because the second conviction, third slight alteration in those facts, and I think you got an absurdity. So I'm not so sure that that was incorrectly decided, but for completely different reasons than the court used, because the court had the fact pattern that they did.
Is there a conflict between 668 and 606.5?
Only with respect to mandatory minimum, consecutive mandatory minimum terms, and not with respect to maximum terms, which still have to be concurrent.
Where's the conflict between the two statutes on the subject of mandatory minimums?
Well, just the idea that if you're looking at an in pari materia analysis, that you're looking, that's the only other statute on the subject of consecutive terms. And
I thought I heard you to suggest that there was or might be a conflict, contradiction between 668 and 606.5 with respect to mandatory minimums. What's the contradiction?
Well, the contradiction might just be in the case where you have sentencing on the same day for the prior offense that triggered the prior offense that triggered the repeat offender and the new offense.
Well, does 668 speak to mandatory minimums?
No, it doesn't. In fact, it hasn't. I've got that on the other side.
668 is silent with respect. When you leave the microphone, the tape is going to be absolutely silent if you're speaking.
That's a copy of 706668, yes.
Yeah, I don't see any reference to mandatory minimums there.
There isn't.
So where's there a contradiction between 668 and 606.5?
I can see that it's possible, but yes, it's really not very clear language when they're talking about other consolidated offenses being up for the same day.
If mandatory minimum sentences are part of an indeterminate maximum sentence, and you have one provision governing indeterminate maximum sentences and one provision governing mandatory minimum sentences, then wouldn't you, under standard statutory construction, apply in pari materia and interpret those statutes together?
Not if they're on a different subject matter.
Well, they are related, are they not?
They're related, but they're not the same subject. The subject of one is...
Well, I go back to my question. Mandatory minimum of what? Mandatory minimum of the indeterminate maximum, right?
Yes.
So don't you have to construe those two statutes together? Because they relate, in effect, to the whole sentence. The whole sentence consists of the indeterminate maximum and, as part of the indeterminate maximum, the mandatory minimum that must be served automatically without any intervention by the parole board.
And I submit there's no conflict unless a court wants to be draconian and give, and it's a very long list of offenses within one indictment, and they want to give a mandatory minimum as to each and every one, as the court did in Kumukau, and that was an abuse of discretion, and really wouldn't make sense. A person stipulates to their probation revocation and gets their cases consolidated. The last thing they want to see is a consecutive anything, but it's... In almost every case, it's doable in some way to give a consecutive mandatory minimum term.
Excuse me, Ms. Barton. Why do you think the court in this case fashioned the sentence the way it did?
Uh, And you're referring to the overall sentence?
Yes.
Okay. I believe the court had serious public safety concerns and did not believe 20 years was enough, and thought that 20 years was the only sentence that could be imposed.
You think the word apprendi might have been in the court's mind?
Definitely not.
Definitely not?
Yes.
Why did Judge Crandall why was Judge Crandall sentencing Mr. Kamenau?
The second time or the third time?
The time we're here for.
The third time. That's because of Apprendi. And
I think that's what Justice Acoba was getting at, but I may be wrong.
Yes. So this situation is unlikely to arise again. But the prosecutor had said that she thought about asking for 20 years. And so it didn't look like the court at that time thought that they could impose consecutive mandatory minimum terms. And they could have, to the extent that it would have taken up the whole 20 years. And he could have been ordered to serve 20 out of 20 under the court's interpretation, if you take Tavares as not being the law at the time, because it was incorrect. So I was just going to give other examples where the, and some examples in my opening brief are, I shouldn't have used, because one was promoting dangerous drug in the third degree and drug paraphernalia. Well, those aren't even enumerated offenses at this time. And also forgery was not an enumerated offense at this time. So I shouldn't have used those as an example. In my opening brief, but I hope that's not confusing. But basically, I'm saying that if you look at the facts of published criminal cases where sentencing was at issue, and you take those facts and you pretend it's 1981 and you look at this statute, you can see that you can fit consecutive terms, consecutive mandatory minimum terms within the maximum term, at least partially, if not completely. But completely in situations where the court would want to, like something like Kumukau, where the person had 23 counts. But in Kiavi, like I said, the person had 14 counts. So in a case like that, of course, an extended term was more lenient than an extended term. And I'm not telling the court that I'm any great big fan of Apprendi. In fact, I noticed when it first came out that there was a Defense Attorneys Association that was against Apprendi, but it does help people like Mr. Kamenau in the short run. But for defendants in the long run, not necessarily. And one thing I want to mention, too, is the Ige case. Mr. Ige had bad timing. Now, he got a long consecutive sentence, and then right after that, 706-668 came out, where his sentences would have had to be concurrent. And so he gets to keep his consecutive sentences because he had bad timing. Well, Mr. Kamenau's timing was good. So I submit that he should keep the more lenient sentence, because 706-668 is not contradicted. And this court has been very strict in applying the plain meaning rule.
Counsel, in the case Safour that was referred to earlier, you said you didn't cite that case.
Right.
And the language in that case in part states, the consecutive sentencing language of HRS 706-606.5 necessarily must be read to allow the sentence on the underlying offense to be served consecutive to to the sentence imposed for the prior offense or offenses. Does that contradict your position in regards to the authority given by 706-606.5?
Well, the wording in the statute after the word or seems to apply to that situation, although it's rather confusing. But I'm saying that that particular situation might be a contradiction, might be deemed a contradiction. But
as to what authority 706.5 gives in terms of allowing consecutive sentencing, it does contradict your position, doesn't it? It doesn't refer merely to the mandatory minimum. It refers to the prior offenses.
Right. Well, I think that that's...
Well, you've indicated that you're unfamiliar with Salfua, and trust us, it doesn't help you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Defendant's infamy as the Black Point rapist is not questioned here today, inasmuch as he's not disputing his guilt for the heinous rapes and sodomy he committed on three different individuals as they lay asleep in her home. With respect to the...
I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but Mr. Fudo, if you don't speak into the mic, we're going to have a silent tape. I tried to review one of the oral arguments that you were a party to some time ago, and there was silence during most of your presentation because you were wandering around. So please stick to the mic.
Feel I need to say this. With respect to wandering around, I had a back operation where they cut the nerves, and I have to take Cymbalta and Lyrica, not because I'm suicidal, but because that's another use for those drugs to stop the firing of the nerves. So typically, I twitch, and it's easier to stop the twitch if I'm moving. But I'm going to do my best to stay in front of this microphone.
Well, I'm not giving you an order, and you're not going to be in contempt if you wander. It's just that there will be silence, and I just wanted to be sure that you knew that.
Okay. I appreciate that, Your Honor. With respect to what I've heard today regarding statutory construction and the plain and clear language, this court has long adhered to it. In this particular circumstance, with respect to the prior version of 706.6.5, you continue to adhere to it. You mentioned the case, Saafu, I believe it's pronounced. It's exactly on point. And it says that what happened in this particular case, the consecutive sentencing, is legal then, it's legal now. It was legal as of 1912 in this jurisdiction under common law. If you look at the case of In Re Matter of S. Kim, it's legal with respect to the allusions I repeatedly thought I heard Judge Acoba make with respect to the imposition of a mandatory minimum necessarily having to attach to the whole sentence. That's the same principle that was announced in Saafua. That's the only way it can be done constitutional, let there not be a problem with separation of powers and extending an open term beyond the statutory mandated term. It can run no other way. In Cornelio, I believe the case is pronounced, Justice Levinson, I believe you authored that, and I believe Justice Moon and Justice Nakayama were also in that opinion. You spoke to Tavares. You spoke to the court in Tavares in very kind terms, but let that court know and let readers know and let people in this jurisdiction know that the court does not legislate, that what the legislature enacts when it's plain and unambiguous, you will follow that mandate, save for constitutional infirmities. We are not here today. Counsel is not professing it was a constitutional infirmity.
How did we in Cornelio read 606.53?
Read it by saying, and I'll just quote, thus, notwithstanding, and then you bracketed 706.668, to the contrary, the first manifestation of HRS section 706.6.5 expressly empowered the sentencing court in its discretion to order that multiple mandatory minimum prison terms thereunder be served consecutively. That's at Cornelio 84, Hawaii, at 488 through 489.
How about 84 at 491, in which we quoted 606.53 with some parenthetical additions to read, the sentencing court may impose the mandatory minimum prison sentences prescribed therein, that is referring to 606.51, consecutive to any other sentence then imposed on the defendant.
That's exactly what occurred here.
In other words, we read 606.5 to pertain to mandatory minimum sentences, period.
I agree. And to what Justice Acoba said, always attaches to the whole sentence. And that's the same thing that the court pronounced in Saafua. In fact, on that
go ahead, finish up.
On that same page, 491, what the court also quoted with respect to Tavares and the two possible interpretations, the one as to the one they ignored that turned out to be the correct, and I quote, the only, and you emphasized only, possible interpretation of the repeat offender statute was that each conviction on a separate count could result in an enhanced criminal sentence. That's what we had here, Your Honor.
In your view, according to your interpretation, would 606.5 permit consecutive mandatory minimum sentencing and concurrent indeterminate maximum? Would it permit that?
No.
Why not?
No. The mandatory minimum attaches to the whole sentence.
I understand your position, but tell me why 606.5 would not permit a sentencing court to impose concurrent indeterminate maximums but have mandatory minimums run consecutively.
Because my opinion would be this, that a court in this jurisdiction would understand, according to Saafua, that a mandatory minimum attaches to the host, so the character of the host attaches to the consecutive. The mandatory minimum, however,
at 606.5 says the court may impose the above sentences consecutively. May. Doesn't have to. So my question to you is, what language, and understanding that a mandatory minimum is parasitic of an indeterminate maximum, I get that part, what in 606.5 would prohibit a sentencing court to impose parasitic consecutive mandatory minimums to host concurrent indeterminate maximums?
I'm going to move away from this mic just for a moment. This would prevent it. I believe now, as I
just
excuse me, yes,
is the upshot of what you just did the assertion that under no circumstances, none, does 606.5 permit concurrent indeterminate maximum sentencing and consecutive mandatory minimum sentencing?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. No, I didn't come here today prepared to address hypothetically whether in
I'm asking you a question. What's your answer to it?
that I'm not prepared to address any sentence other than that was given in this case.
In other words, you're refusing to answer my question?
No. If that's the case, then I would refer this court to T-A-U-I-L-I-I. In that situation, I would say if the prosecutor could prevail upon the sentencing court to do that, on appeal, when the defendant challenged his sentence, I would contend that it's harmless error because, as the court pointed out in that case I just spelled, the paroling authority, I'm going to move away from this mic just for a second. The paroling authority, what they can't do is this. You serve this mandatory minimum of 5, and then on this mandatory 10, you don't start in here, you start in here. So in that sense, effectively and so when the way that this court in the Talalili, I believe it is pronounced, case, said that the mandatory minimums must be credited is consecutively to each other. So therefore, on appeal, as I demonstrated on the board, practically you would have concurrent sentences with the mandatory minimums running consecutively. So I would argue, as long as the consecutive computation didn't exceed the longest open indeterminate term, it's harmless error. But I would suggest to the court on appeal that they make a clerical amendment to the judgment to reflect a more constitutional sentence.
Well, let me ask you this question. Say it's 1981 or 1985, and we have 668 as it was written, and we have 606.5 as it was written. And let's suppose a defendant is convicted of 2 counts of sexual assault in the first degree, Class A felony. And let's say the defendant is a repeat offender. Is it your position that 606.5 would not permit a sentencing court to impose concurrent 20-year indeterminate maximums and consecutive 5-year mandatory minimums?
I can't say I haven't thought about that. I mean, like right now, you know, if you were the sentencing judge asking me that, I would ask the court for between 17 and 20 minutes to research that question. If you're asking it to me now, I would again say that on that, you'd get a 5 mandatory minimum for the, and we're talking about a multi-count indictment, I suspect. You'd get a
2-count indictment charging 2 counts of sexual assault in the first degree, a conviction of both, the defendant's a repeat offender. Where in 606.5 is the sentencing court precluded from imposing concurrent indeterminate maximum 20-year terms and consecutive 5-year mandatory minimums?
I don't see where it's precluded.
Thank you. That answers my question.
If you answer it that way, then haven't you conceded that your position is incorrect?
No.
Well, isn't the answer that if you use the term mandatory minimum and the concept, well, I have to disagree with it, no, but that it would be a contradiction in terms to treat a mandatory minimum sentence as severable from the indeterminate maximum sentence of which it is a part.
Your Honor, I said that. You said that in Feliciano. The court said it in Saafua.
Not everyone here, though, agrees with that. That's why I'm asking you again.
But I only have 30 minutes in an argument, so I said I would research it.
You just said now there was a contradiction to your note. So if it would be a contradiction in terms as well as concept to say that you could sever out a mandatory minimum from an indeterminate maximum term. Then isn't that the answer to why you cannot run mandatory minimums consecutively, but the indeterminate maximums of which they are a part concurrently?
I agree.
Okay. And, you know, if we look at 706.606.5 only, then is the answer that you can't look only at that statute in isolation. Because if that statute speaks, when it speaks of mandatory minimums, in terms of part of the indeterminate maximum sentence, then you have to also look at the provision which relates to indeterminate maximum sentences.
By provision, you mean the statute, therefore.
Yeah, you have to look at 606.5 and 668.
No, not 668. 668.
688, is it?
Yeah, 668.
668, the one that says indeterminate maximum sentences must run concurrently versus 706.606.5, which says you can run mandatory minimums consecutively.
No, I'm going to say no on that, because, see, that's the problem. 668 doesn't say that. Defense counsel has said it says that. It doesn't speak to maximum indeterminate terms. It just speaks to terms of imprisonment. That's all.
You mean the words indeterminate maximum sentence are not in 668? You are right. It says multiple sentences of imprisonment.
That's all it says.
Okay.
And in this court's recent case, authored by Justice Levinson, of which I believe also Justice Moon and Nakayama were a part, again, speaking with respect to the language in 706.606.5, you say consistently and historically, with respect to that statute, notwithstanding any law to the contrary, plainly and simply means only that. So you don't go anywhere else.
Cornelio was only concerned as to that issue with respect to the propriety of consecutive mandatory minimums. Isn't that so?
I understand, yes. And I didn't say Cornelio. I said Smith, Your Honor. It was Smith that you said that.
I didn't write that.
668. Okay. You wrote Smith, right?
Justice Levinson wrote Smith.
Yeah.
I have a copy.
Wrote Smith?
Right.
Yeah, you wrote Smith.
I'm getting old.
No, I'm old. I feel a lot older. But
668 is used as the defense's reason why the sentence in this case is inconsistent or illegal. Is that right?
That's what defense counsel.
And multiple sentences relate to indeterminate maximum sentences, I assume, because it's a very general and broad statute.
Okay, that's your assumption.
Well,
no, I agree. That's your assumption.
Do you agree? Disagree with that? 668 is
no,
a broad.
No, all I know
statute.
Is case law. I know that in Feliciano, you and in Jess, you implored the court to stick to stare decisis and precedent. The precedent is Smith. Smith says this court's long-established controlling precedent holds, notwithstanding any language, any law to the contrary, means only that, and with respect to 706.6.5, 668 is of no consequence.
Well, it's of consequence because it pertains to this case.
Then if it does...
Smith is fine. Smith is case law, and Smith certainly presents an alternative argument where this court said, no matter what, 706.606.5 controls over other statutes. And so you can apply that principle. I agree with you, even though Smith was decided after 668, I think, was repealed, that would apply in this case because it applies across the board, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Fudo, in your view, what are the above sentences, quote unquote, alluded to in 606.53?
The complete sentence for the enumerated crimes, which include mandatory minimums and the indeterminate opens for which you go to other statutes to find where they are prescribed by the legislature.
The only reference to sentencing in 606.51 is shall be sentenced for each conviction after the first conviction to a mandatory minimum period of imprisonment as follows. That's it. I mean, isn't that what the above sentences are?
The statute has three paragraphs. To isolate one statute out without consideration or reference to others is not how I read a statute. So I would have to say no. And I would have to say, based on case law, Saufa, and In Re Matter of S. Kim, for as long as I've known, the mandatory minimums are only part and subsumed within the whole sentences.
So that I don't think there's any dispute that mandatory minimums are obviously a part of an entire sentence.
So I don't
think
they're
a component of a sentence. The fact remains that there is no reference to any component of an entire sentence in 606.5 other than mandatory minimums. Isn't that so?
No. Because it says shall be sentenced, and then it's referring to the crime, all the
shall be sentenced
crimes.
To a mandatory minimum.
Actually, it doesn't say mandatory minimum. It says
actually,
maximum
it does.
Term of imprisonment.
Well, period. Shall be sentenced to a mandatory minimum period of imprisonment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it's in reference to these prior convictions. So you can't just sentence. What would the court do? Just have a freestanding mandatory minimum of 5 imposed to what? I mean, wouldn't that extend it beyond the indeterminate term? Wouldn't that be double jeopardy? Wouldn't that violate separation?
Yes. That, well, what about that? So if, for example, and I am borrowing from Justice Levinson's example, but if you want to pose it, you can, Steve. If you run, say you had 6 Class A felonies, you want to do it?
Are you referring to the prosecution's hypothetical?
Yeah. Well, so for example, if you had 6 Class A felonies, and so you would have a mandatory minimum term on each one of those of 5 years. And so under the statute, you can run the mandatory minimums consecutively. So if you ran them consecutively, you'd have, I guess, a term of 30 years total. But if you applied these statutes in isolation and said those 6 felonies would also be subject to mandatory indeterminate maximum sentences, but you ran the indeterminate maximum sentences concurrently like you have in 668, so that you would have mandatory minimums totaling 30 years, but your indeterminate maximum sentence would end, because they run concurrently, at 20 years. Is there a problem there?
Yes, there's a problem.
What's the problem?
Well, the statute prescribes that an indeterminate open period of imprisonment for a Class A is 20 years. The extra 10 years, then, is unserved.
Obviously, a minimum cannot exceed a maximum. Isn't that so?
Yeah, that unless it's prescribed by statute. Yeah, that's true. Yes, that's
true. It would be
true.
The bizarre statute that would prescribe a minimum in excess of a maximum, but be that as it may, if you simply capped consecutive mandatory minimums at the maximum, you'd have no problem, would you?
Yeah, you would have if who would cap it? The sentencing?
If by operation of law, consecutive mandatory minimums were capped at the indeterminate maximum, which is the greatest period of time the convicted defendant may serve a prison term, there's no problem.
Well, if there was a law that said that, yeah, I agree, there's no problem. But there wasn't a law that said that.
Will you have any problems with a law that said that? In other words, instead of 30 years mandatory minimum sentence total, you'd serve only 20 because the 30 would exceed the 20 concurrent indeterminate maximum terms.
Would I have a problem with that?
Yeah. We don't have a law like that right now, but what would your position be if that were proposed?
Well, one, I'm assuming you mean proposed by a sentencing court? If it was proposed by an appellate court, I would say, actually, that's the purview of the legislators under the separation of powers doctrine. I would also posit to the court, under the doctrine of constitutional doubt, to interpret a sentence such that it will be unconstitutional violates another fundamental statute of statutory construction. I would also say then, before the court did that, please look at the legislative history, and there's absolutely no indication that the legislature intended to do that. But what there is an obvious indication is in 76, 79, through the amendments of 706, 6.5, the legislature was acutely and keenly concerned with the problem posed by recidivists, and they wanted an immediate solution to the problem. This wouldn't be it, because now you have a situation where the statutorily imposed mandatory minimums couldn't be constitutionally imposed. Why would I, as a prosecutor, posit that to a sentencing court? I just don't see it, Your Honor. I see you folks' case, the court's case law, and that's the only rules I'm going to play by. So I understand that the court is final, and for that reason, you are correct, and I respect that. And we've been on different sides many times. But in this particular case, it's so plain and obvious with respect to the language, I just can't imagine a reason to try and divine some other legislative intent in a situation that's not before the court, where counsel has made the concession she does, where counsel has said that the court was concerned with the danger to society that Mr. Kamenow posed, and lo and behold, he was also the recidivist that the legislatures were concerned with. Although they frequently may be termed to miss the mark in their legislation, in this case, they hit it. Recidivist got out. Justice Moon, he was on conviction. He had a parole. He was on parole for a gun violation. He got revoked. He was in. They got the open file for that. That triggered it. So just as the legislator said, he as a recidivist posed that danger for the serious and heinous crimes. What were they? Rape, sodomy, three different victims' own home. It's not a date rape. It's not a husband and wife kind of 709 situation. These are absolute strangers sleeping in their bed. In one case with their husband, he breaks in and rapes him. Is that serious? Is that heinous? My book it is. I'm old school. Another victim, old, asks the defendant, why you do this to me? I'm an old person. Shut up. I will rip your guts out. Is that violent enough? Does that justify the sentence he got? I think he does. I think just punishment was meted out. For defense counsel to say Kamenow was lucky? I don't know how he's lucky. Because to me, under a Rule 35 motion, if this sentence was to be set aside as illegal, my limited knowledge of Jess tells me that we could go back and then ask for extended. Because as this court pointed out in Jess, and I believe that was authored by Justice Levinson, with the four concurrence and Justice Acoba dissenting, it was said that the court always had the inherent power to impose the extended. And that's what I attempted to argue to Justice Crandall at the hearing, but she was uncomfortable with that proposition. She was equally uncomfortable at 8:30 in the morning, as my case preceded Jess, to reserve the question. And thus you have the history of how this is here. And under this court's jurisprudence in Frye, as well as Keavi, when there's a Rule 35 motion granted for an illegal sentence, we go back to square one with the board wiped clean. In his mind in 1984, he got extended. He could get extended again.
Thank you.
To vacate and remand for resentencing and allow an extended term motion would violate HRS 706-609 because that would be a more severe sentence. As to how I came out with the 20 years on this case, for the three sexual assault cases, 5 years, 5 years, 5 years. For the three burglary cases, a concurrent 5 years. So, and that would make sense. So that would give you 20 out of 20 if you were going to give consecutive mandatory minimum terms. You can do, courts do it all the time for mathematical reasons or because they're looking at what is fair in that particular case. A mixed concurrent, consecutive, extended. What the prosecutor is arguing is that if you can't do a kumukau type of sentence in each and every case, then there's a contradiction, and that's just not true. You can give partial effect to mandatory minimum terms without harming concurrent maximum terms or consecutive mandatory minimum terms without harming concurrent maximum terms almost all of the time, probably all of the time. To pretend that multiple counts in an indictment that have a concurrent sentence somehow disappear, they're still there. They're just superimposed upon one another, but they're still there. So to pretend that they disappear is wrong. So mathematically, if they usually fit, so there's no contradiction. So basically, the prosecutor's approach is an all or nothing approach. If you can't give all consecutive everything, then there's a contradiction. And mathematically and logically and in the real world, that's not really true.
Well, what about the prosecution's hypothetical, Ms. Barnard, you know, where you have six counts, Class A convictions, sentences imposed concurrently, mandatory minimums by virtue of the defendant being a repeat offender imposed consecutively, 6 times 5 is 30, that's greater than the indeterminate maximum. What do you do then?
Then you do a partial concurrent for part of the counts. The court could have done for this case. Some of them are consecutive, and then like all three burglaries are a concurrent 5-year term for each one.
Because the minimum can't exceed the maximum by definition.
That's correct. And that would make all the sense in the world because these weren't, the burglaries were just walking into an unlocked door. So it was the sexual assaults that were the serious crimes here. It wasn't breaking down and tearing up somebody's house type of burglary. It was just walking in the door and then the sexual assaults. So it makes sense to run those consecutive in all three burglary cases, 5-5-5 concurrent, and then add them all up. That's 20 out of 20. And so you don't have to want to do a consecutive mandatory minimum term for each and every count because you have indictments like Mr. Kahapea. Mr. Kahapea is a good example. The court did 50 years maximum term. The court would not reasonably be expected to want to give the maximum for everything, and that was an abuse of his discretion under Kumukau. And under Chiavi, like I said, 5 years consecutive, 5-year indeterminate term consecutive, it would be 70 years. And that's just excessive. The two sexual assault cases are a good example. That's where it's easily possible. And I think this court will find that most cases it would be easily possible to at least give partial effect to consecutive mandatory minimum terms, which are, in the real world, rarely done anyway.
Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this matter under advisement.
Mr. Ivins, there's none of the Supreme Court, it's obvious.